Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marge Regan. Here with us in Studio 3 for his and her take on the moral dilemmas of the day are Reverends Irene Monroe and Emmett Price. Irene Monroe is a religion columnist. Reverend Emmett Price is a professor of music at Northeastern University. Good to see you both.
Hey, thanks for having us back.
Great pleasure. To be here. Irene whispered in my ear when she came in, she might say something nice about the Pope today.
Oh, let's do that first then before she changes her mind.
You're right. I might change my mind.
Yeah. Well, we don't want to do that first. We want to go in order here, Jim, because I've got my little list all made up. So we're going to start with Walter Scott. People know he was the unarmed man that was stopped for a traffic violation and ended up being shot multiple times by a police officer down in South Carolina. We talked about this last week, and we've talked about it a lot. But I wonder what you guys make of the fact that we saw that video over and over and over and over again on TV. And it seemed almost a little disrespectful to me, but I don't know. Maybe I'm mistaken. What do you think, Irene?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that my concern is that when you see it over and over again, people become insensitive to the dehumanization of what's going on, you know, to black male bodies. I think the thing that bothers me, and I have a new slogan, just as we say Black Lives Matter, I think we need another one called How Cops Respond Matter. And it really puts Yeah, I think it puts an emphasis and a it sort of tamped down some of the edginess people have with it, looking at it as just a black and white issue, because we are really talking about the culture. But there's a bigger issue that I'm most concerned about, and I'm really concerned, and I always say this, that today now a black man's best friend these days is a video of him being stopped by the police. But I'm really worried about the trauma, the sort of what will become the intergenerational trauma of seeing black bodies beaten and brutalized, and I worry about particularly Mr. Scott's incident, because one of the things that was interesting is that we see him get out of the car and run, and we hear from his brother, his oldest brother, who said he never wanted to go to jail. So it made me think about, was this a form of what we would call cop-assisted suicide? And that's the whole thing, that these people may not otherwise be suicidal, but may simply decide that life is not worth living if they're going to be incarcerated, and then provoke the police to kill them. Because this, we're talking about a 50-year-old man. We're not talking about a kid who makes dumb mistakes, really, yeah. And who's just, you know, impetuous.
You know, I have to, you know, Emmett, I have raised this issue nonstop because it's driving me crazy. The first time I saw the video, and admittedly I'm not a fan of his, so that may have colored my view, was on Don Lemon, mm-hmm. the night of the thing, where essentially this was a loop. The whole hour that I was watching, all I saw was this black guy getting shot in the back. And as I said to Marjorie, I think the next day, if that had been a white woman who had been shot in the back from Weston, mm-hmm. would we have seen that video?
No.
10,000 times? And by the way, I think there is value to seeing the video. I'm surely not suggesting it shouldn't be made public. But the nonstop playing of it, in my mind at least, was a function of the color of the guy's skin.
Yeah. I mean, you will recall that when the Eric Garner situation happened, you know, we talked about the video, and I told you I refused to watch it. Mm-hmm. And every time it came on, I turned, and I do the same thing with this scenario. Because I just refuse to watch it. For me, it's an opportunity for, and I would say this, for white people to come to grips with the fact that this is a reality and not just a nuance or just some, you know, extreme situation. It's the opportunity to replay it and replay it to see if they can backseat quarterback it, to see if this is real. And you have 90 different police shooting murders since January 1 and 200 since the Trayvon Martin case. And so this is a situation that's very different from Mamie Thiel making the corpse of Emmett Thiel public so that folks can actually see the heinous crime and criminalization of blackness.
That's
per
right.
se. This is very different. This is media orientation. This is like over-sensational, and it needs to stop.
You're not, but let me be clear. You're not saying it shouldn't have, you chose not to watch it. You're not saying it shouldn't have been played.
I think it should be
You're
played.
You're saying it shouldn't be played ad nauseum.
Exactly. It should be played because one or two times
becomes,
and then archived.
It becomes a form of sadistically, and perhaps not intentionally, but but it becomes a form of infotainment in a way.
I think there's truth to that.
And the interesting thing that has troubled me, that even as we now have this case with Mr. Scott, Walter Scott, we have a new case of this guy, Mr. Harris, 44 years old from Oklahoma, who was just recently shot. And it brought back—
This was the alleged taser/gun mistake, confusion.
Yeah, like the cop had the cop thought, meant to, quote, shoot him, but accidentally tased him. And then, of course, it plays into implicit and explicit bias that do I automatically, when I see a black male body, I just automatically shoot? But the other thing that becomes really very, very interesting is that it resonated very much with the Eric Gardner story where he says, I can't breathe. And the cops, you know, using explicatives said, I don't effing care and stuff. So that's why I agree with Emmett when he talks about the looping, the ongoing looping of it. We become insensitive. We move so far from it.
And there's a huge tension because Jim's analogy of the white woman in Weston, that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, you have scenarios where cops pull over white individuals, male and female, and you get mouthing back and you get all kinds of, you know, physical altercations, mm-hmm. but there's never a shooting. And I don't want anyone to get shot, so I'm not suggesting that it should happen, but there is a differential treatment in these situations, and you control Facebook and Twitter and find all these situations to see the differential in treatment.
Yeah, yeah. Let me tell you the one, I know this is not an original thought, but since I'm sort of a messenger of all negativism today, I do think this is a turning point kind of thing. I thought the Eric Garner video was clear cut. I can understand how some small minority of people don't. I did think the Tamir Rice video in Cleveland was clear cut. I understand how some may not. There's nothing. There's no other side to this thing. And when you see the numbers out of places like South Carolina, I don't have them right in front of me. What was it, 200 officer shootings? I think it was over a five-year period.
Yeah.
In every single case,
yes. And
not one case was it deemed to be an inappropriate shooting
yes. By
the cop. I have to believe, and this may be naive on my part, that going forward, it's going to be a lot harder for authorities to say when there isn't a video, oh, by the way, there was no question. The cop was totally in the right. The defendant provoked, I mean, the shootee, the dead person or the person shot, provoked them. It seems to me this, as his family is hoping, the Scott family hopes, that this is the beginning of a new era of average people, not activists, average people questioning the official line when someone is killed prematurely in at least a questionable situation. I hope
that's
the case.
I just love the way you keep hope alive on this.
Well, I rarely do, but I do now.
That is the other side, obviously, of seeing this, that you wouldn't see the white woman in Weston, but you can't have missed poor Mr. Scott.
That's
right. And when you do see it, almost every time you see it, you think, look at that.
Right.
The guy's running away, and he just keeps shooting. And unless you are...
And it would have been another justifiable homicide had there not been
yes.
a video.
So let's not forget that when the case first broke, the conversation was, why did he grab the police officer's taser?
Right.
See, so we still have this criminalization of the black body before we get to the point.
And by
of
the
saying,
way, he had child support issues. I mean,
he's
had
not
some
a criminal.
Old time assault and batteries, but they were from like way back in the early 90s. So he was worried about his outstanding child support.
And why do we know that?
Not violent.
And why do we know that?
Well,
see, that has nothing to do.
And that to me proves the point that, you know, was this cop assisted suicide for him? Because this guy is not a criminal. This is a man who's...
Well, I don't think many people go to... How many people go to jail for child support? Not that
right.
many.
Right. That's exactly right. So how, you know, he's being harassed.
I don't
harassed.
Think it was suicide. I think it was the reality of black anxiety.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
the absolute anxiety of seeing these cases time and time again and knowing that the time that you get stopped could be... You know,
right.
Irene used to say, I'm glad she doesn't say it anymore, but I hope I see Emmett next week.
That's,
right?
When well,
we're talking
I do.
About these
I do.
Height. And there is a real anxiety there
yeah.
that I'm not sure that some folks realize the heightened aspect of it.
He
so
might
that's
have just
why,
panicked.
Yeah.
He might have just
been
well, see,
plain
that's,
old panic.
That's the thing, that they don't see the humanness of us, because some of us might very well panic. And that's why I say how cops respond matter, and we really need to emphasize that.
You know, I don't think we've seen you since this, but very briefly before we change gears, did you both see Anderson Cooper's interview with the mother of Walter Scott?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you want to cry.
This woman, yeah. I mean, for those who haven't seen it, if you haven't, you have to Google it and see it. While obviously she mourns the loss of one of her sons, in the same interview she talks about forgiveness
yes,
for
yes.
the shooter. For
yes.
the it is one of the most powerful things I have ever seen. We're talking Emmett Price and Irene
Christian
Monroe.
She's a better Christian than I could ever be.
She's a really. Better human than really. I could ever be. Speaking of Christian, let's talk about Hillary Rodham Clinton for a moment. I did not. Who referred to her in something we read this morning as a social justice Methodist, Marjorie? Where was it?
It's in the headline in the Washington Post.
Washington Post. Yeah. She carries a Bible in her purse. How important – it seems to me – we've had this discussion ad nauseum through the years, Marjorie and I, that unless you are a person of faith, in fact, a person who wears their faith in their sleeve – and I haven't ever found her to be that way. Have you? I'm not sure that it's pretty hard to get elected president.
I like
the
fact when Bill Clinton used to carry the Bible out of church right in the middle of the Monica Lewinsky mess.
You know? Yeah.
I like big, fat right. Bible. But she does. I mean, she was very involved in her church growing up, the First United Methodist Church in Illinois. She was on this guild that cleaned the altar, visited inner-city Chicago churches. This is from this piece this morning in the Washington Post. She had a spiritual mentor from that church, and they also talk about her carrying the personal Bible.
I'm suspect. The interesting thing is that nowadays, electability to public office is how churched you are. And I don't know when it started, because Jimmy Carter truly was in many ways an evangelical Christian, and never once did he proselytize.
Absolutely.
You know, and did I know whether he carried his Bible or
totally
what he
right.
did on Sunday mornings? I just think that we are just a better nation when we prohibit any religious test or requirement, really, for public office. And I think another thing that we don't really recognize is that when we're talking about religion, we're really talking about Christian hegemony, because we've only really had one Catholic president, and we've never had a Jewish president. So, I mean, I think we're
almost had a Mormon.
We almost did. But I just think we're a better nation when we really embrace the whole idea of separation between church and state, and that we are an ecumenical people, and we're a pluralistic
nation.
Well,
but answer my question, all three of you. I don't remember. I mean, again, she just announced yesterday, but Hillary Clinton is not she doesn't wear her religion, and her faith appears to be real from this Washington Post thing. I mean, she's just a religious person who has that as part of her life.
I mean, I think that's part of her testimony, and it's beautiful. But if it's going to be posed as what's going to get her elected, I would love to see her tithe some of that two point whatever billion that would be raised for a campaign.
That would be wonderful.
To some impoverished people and homeless people. Yeah. I'd love to see that.
Well, you did see. I remember when they announced the people's contributions to charity. Poor Joe Biden wasn't doing very well.
Oh, that was horrible. That's right.
But Romney was doing very well. I think Obama was doing pretty well, too. They were both tithing. I think weren't they up like 14% or something like that?
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Speaking of this, have you seen the commercial? I don't know why this came. Well, it did come to mind because of something Irene said. Have you seen the commercial that I think plays nonstop? I think it's on CNN. I hope I have this right. Of Ron Reagan Jr. On behalf of an Ronnie. Atheist organization.
I love it.
It's really quite. Yeah. It's we should maybe next week talk about it, because I don't have the sound
running
about,
for president.
No. About being an atheist,
that's
a card carrying atheist, mm-hmm. and he mentions the name of the organization, which I'm embarrassed to say. I don't know if it's Madeline Murray O'Hare. I don't know whose it is. It's a commercial public.
It's a very good
announcement for atheism.
Well, he is with the movement of the biggest group in the United States of America, because the biggest movement in America is to know God. So
is that really true?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. No, right. Non-belief.
But see, Cruz has come out and declared his candidacy. And, of course, there were all these religious references in Rubio. So, I mean,
Cruz declared didn't he?
At Liberty University.
Liberty or
where
right.
he never attended.
Yeah.
Right.
Where
right.
he never attended.
Right. So, I mean, the point is that you can't grandstand any bigger than Cruz, because, right, he's really in the heart of it. And so, I mean, it's really a shame that we look, our lens of looking at a candidate is just how religious.
Evangelical Christian vote, before we get to the Pope, which we do every week on Pope Watch. I was stunned in the last election, or maybe it was two election cycles ago, because the stereotype I think people like me have of evangelical Christians, and I know you two know this not to be true, is it Deep South kind of stuff. What was that number we used a lot, Marjorie? Was it in the Pennsylvania Republican primary? 40-some percent of the voters were self-identified evangelical.
That's Pennsylvania.
Well, that is a corner of Pennsylvania where I grew up. I didn't grow up in that corner, but a corner of the state in which I mean, it is a huge, huge movement. And by the way, they are moving on a lot of issues that I know you, Irene Monroe, care about, especially young evangelicals. In any case, it's that time again, boys and girls. It is Pope Watch. And I was going to bring up the first topic, but before we do, why don't we just find out, why do you have a positive take on the Pope this week?
I like the Pope this week very much. I applaud the Pope. He doesn't always get it right, but he certainly did yesterday in Mass. And I think that when he talked about the Armenian genocide, I think that it was quite appropriate to name it for what it is. And the tactics of genocide denial is always predictable, and I think that the Turkish government used every one of them, which is question and minimize the statistics, attack the motivations of the truth teller, blame out-of-control forces for committing the killing, claim the massacres didn't fit the legal definition of genocide, even when we had over a million. And lastly, studies have shown that that genocide scholars have proven that the best predictor of future genocide is the denial of a past one, and particularly impunity. For its perpetrators. So I think that, you know what, he was on the right side of justice. You know, this is a guy that, he doesn't shock me because I know he has it in him. And this was one of those moments I said, you know, right on, Poppy.
100th anniversary.
I'm going to get you a pizza.
Of the genocide. Well, as doctors said, they prefer you don't. But it's the 100th anniversary on the 24th. My understanding, I think I'm right about this, that Turkey has pulled their ambassador to the Vatican. But I mentioned to Marjorie, a good friend of mine who's a high-profile Armenian in this country, very involved in Armenian organizations, I was supposed to speak to on the phone yesterday. I couldn't speak to him yesterday because he told me on Saturday he had gotten on a plane to fly to the Vatican just to hear what the Pope had to say, and then got back on a plane. It's a huge moment.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I'm still trying to catch my breath from Irene being excited about the Pope this week. But I totally agree that this was a huge, courageous move, particularly in the landscape of international politics. Turkey's response is Turkey's response. But I believe, as Irene very articulately said, that it's time that we deal in the truth. Mm-hmm. Right. So that, you know, back in 1915, the whole Ottoman Empire and all the stuff that happened there, it was a mass genocide. And we need to call it for that. You have a mass exodus of people who really don't have a country to claim. Right. Because there is no more Armenia. Right. And so this is a real important moment for this generation and this population of people, as as the descendants and the diaspora.
And these are crimes against humanity. And my hope is that in acknowledging this genocide, then it opens the historical canon and rewrite it correctly of other genocides, those that have taken place in Japan. You know, we acknowledge the one, certainly, the Holocaust, but we don't acknowledge others. I mean, it took a while when Clinton acknowledged the one in Rwanda. I think that it opens the door that we can look at when these things are happening, let's call it and let's bring about change. So I think that he set a great example of, you know, truth to, you know, just telling the truth.
Guy, I hate to, you know,
I'm deciding the same thing.
This did you hear about the French ambassador?
Yeah, see, now,
I think
this
it's
is
maybe
he,
better
see,
you don't
yeah,
bring
see,
this up. Yeah. Oh, right. Why are you ruining the mood?
Okay, now this is the part that gets me upset.
Okay.
It's too
because
late.
See, this is like two steps forward.
We should
and three
point,
steps
point
back.
Out that the,
and I can't stop talking about this because it really does bother me.
Okay, I should tell people the Vatican has been dragging its feet. Back in January, they nominated this guy, Laurent Stefanini, to be the France's ambassador to the Holy See, and they've not yet approved him, and there's suspicions that it has to do with Stefanini being gay. But I did ruin the mood, didn't I? Completely.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm going.
Yeah.
I'm leaving.
Okay. Okay. Well, we hope that this is not true and that he will be approved, and we'll see what happens. But it seems to be taking an awful long time.
And it's hypocritical. This is a guy that said, who is to judge? And the interesting thing that bothers me about this, the Pope knows the Vatican is very gay.
Yeah.
So it's not like
we don't know the reason yet. I mean, this is akin to the Loretta Lynch situation. We just don't know.
Well, say more about that.
Wait,
how's
it akin to
that? I mean, there's politics at the Vatican. I mean, you can't just pose somebody and say the Pope has to approve on them. There's a political system that goes into play. And all of the reporting that we've read is conjecture, trying to figure out why.
No, it isn't.
And the analysis has pointed to the fact that this person is perhaps openly gay or whatnot, and he's from France or whatnot. But we don't know. No one said
France or whatnot, openly gay or whatnot.
No one said that the reason why he has not been voted in is this.
Of course not. Of course, no one would ever be so blatantly prejudiced.
Sure, they would.
No, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't. But the point about it is that the Pope has the power, like he called the genocide that took place in Armenia. He has the power to change, really, the homophobia that is pervasive in
a lot. The Pope is not an emperor.
Oh, well, listen, that's not true because he's doing empire.
Culture changes slowly and surely.
He's doing empire building.
Can I make a suggestion? Can I make a suggestion?
Marjorie, why'd you raise this?
Is one of the co-hosts of the show.
I shouldn't have.
Let's do this. Let's end with 30 seconds of you talking about the Pope in Armenia one more time. I mean, go ahead. Just to leave us with a different mood. Go ahead, take 30 seconds. Go ahead.
He was on the right side of justice.
Right Thank side you. Of justice. Thank right side
that's
of history.
You don't
speaking
need 30
to the power.
Seconds.
Amen.
That was
Amen.
Beautiful. Amen. All the way around. Both. Reverend Imee Monroe is a syndicated religion columnist. Reverend Emmett Price, the professor of music at Northeastern University. His latest book is The Black Church and Hip-Hop Culture Toward Bridging the Generational Divide. Emmett and Irene, we had that wonderful moment there. You're right, I did ruin it, but I couldn't. I should have just kept quiet. Anyway, thanks much for being here. Coming up, the big myth on campus when it comes to a college degree is where we go not as important as what we think it is. Frank Bruni thinks so. He joins us next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.